This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a nonprofit with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Change menus, change lives. Learn more at chefscollaborative.org.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network. We're a member-supported food radio network broadcasting over 35 weekly shows live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. Join our hosts as they lead you through the world of craft brewing, behind the scenes of the restaurant industry, inside the battle over school food, and beyond. Find us at heritageradionetwork.org.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz, sitting here with Nick Adler, festival director of Arroyo Seco, co-founder of Eat Drink Vegan, and one of, if not the guy credited with changing the way we think about food at festivals. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes.
It's one of my favorite places to be.
Yeah, it's we'll call you Bud of the Tunes, real friend.
Okay.
Friend of the Tunes. So let's start big picture. Mm-hmm. Arroyo Seco is happening next week.
Yep.
Which is crazy. Thank you for making the time to talk with us with about a week out from the festival. What is it, for those who don't know, big picture?
Arroyo Seco weekend, and I think we deliberately didn't call it a festival. Mm. We didn't put music and arts. We didn't put food festival. We didn't define it. I think the festival and how people interact with it mm-hmm. is how it's going to be defined.
Interesting.
And it also allows us to go in different directions. If drink just becomes this magic thing in our drink program with our biodynamic and natural wines and kombucha and craft beer, like if that takes off, then if we would have gone with music and arts festival, we would have kind of pigeonholed ourselves. And the same goes for food. The same could go for art. You know, so I think it's more of an overall experience of what's great in LA. And at the same time as it's what's great in LA, it's also about things that maybe we don't do so much in LA. Paul and I, who Paul Tillett, the founder of Coachella and also put this together with myself, we were in New York and we were at Corona Park.
What year is this?
This was about last, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
And we had gone at about 2 o'clock and there was no one in the park.
Mm-hmm.
And we're walking around and just so beautiful. And then as we're walking through the park just came alive.
Mm.
And it went from zero to every family, every age demo. Some people had food. Some people were playing soccer. Some people were playing board games. It just came alive. And we both kind of looked at each other and said, you know, LA doesn't really have like this park culture. We have beach culture. We have, you know, we can go to the mountains. We can do these other things. But we don't have this just take the family, put the blanket down, put some tunes on. Mm. I think for many reasons, we felt like there was an opportunity with the Arroyo Seco weekend, but really the opportunity to just put the blanket down, listen to great music, enjoy food, and also what we do with food all the time, we enjoy each other's company.
Yeah, I mean, definitely sitting around a meal with the family is a memory that a lot of people cherish and things to look forward to, especially during the summer.
Yes.
So how do you take, I mean, obviously both you and Paul have full plates. Already. You guys do not need to add any more festivals. You do not need to add anything more to the schedule.
Sound like my wife.
But, you know, how do you take that idea of seeing the beauty of, like, New York park life and turn it into something that is this big? What are the steps?
Well, one, I think you have to see it. So
yeah.
I think you have to have this idea. And that needs to come from... I don't think Paul or I felt like we had this idea or a set of bands or a set of food or what this might be before we actually saw the location. So we were tailgating at a UCLA football game, enjoying a beer, talking about all kinds of things, kind of looked up at the same time and realized that we were sitting on an amazing festival site, which is the Brookside Golf Course, which
is beautiful,
just adjacent to the Rose Bowl, and that's where everything starts, you know, in this situation. I think there are festivals that you have a concept, you go look for a space.
Sure.
This actually started with the space, and that kind of dictated everything from there. So, you know, it was what kind of food fits well with the space, what kind of music is going to work well in the Arroyo, who's going to come to this thing, who is that person that's going to put down that blanket, hang with their friends. So maybe we reverse engineered it based on location.
Interesting. I mean, Pasadena, the city itself is playing a big role in this festival.
It is.
Especially family itself. I know that you have a bunch of local partnerships. Again, Pasadena is a city that doesn't need to take anything else on. You know, they have the Rose Bowl. They have a ton of other things that go on there. So what's it been like working with the city and then some of the charities that you're working with to really make this, you know, a different type of event?
Mm-hmm. Well, this started, you know, I'll go back. We had this idea from the location and kind of these grand ideas started flowing through our heads. But we also were doing it in Pasadena. And so there was kind of a political, there was a kind of these different processes that we had to go through. And it wasn't just like, hey, we got a location, let's throw a festival. This was meet with every single homeowner association, meet with planning commission, do an EIR, which took 2.5 years. So although we came in with a lot of our own ideas, many, many ideas that have actually come out of this festival are ideas that were shaped by the community. And so that was, and also realizing that there's some great high schools that are great, but also that need a little help. Mm-hmm. And so one of the angles that we came into the city was, if we're going to take and do our festival and do whatever we want here, we're also going to make sure that we're giving back as much as we can. Mm-hmm. And I think that's how we started that idea. But what's happened is that we've gotten so much from the community and so much from the schools. There's a kind of a art collective called Side Street Projects. Mm-hmm. And we are working with them, and they are going out to the different schools, John Muir High School, some of the art collectives that for the youth. And we've partnered with Vromans and this art collective to create little libraries, which is
at the festival,
which goes back to what is one of the, you know, important things that we got out of meetings with Pasadena, was that there was this book culture and there was this literature culture. Mm-hmm. And we're thinking like, okay, well, how do you even integrate that into a music festival?
Right.
But we just, in communities around Southern California, you'll find these little birdhouse looking, take one, leave one, libraries. And so we got with the kids to build them. We got with Vromans, which is just a fixture in Pasadena, to be the festival librarian, which is probably a word that's, those two words have never gone together.
But I mean, that sounds like the coolest job in the world.
Yeah. And all the books are about Pasadena, whether that's authors, whether it's about architecture, landscaping, sports, whatever it might be. So we were able to find different ways at this festival to integrate all the different parts of the city and festival together.
I mean, it's really cool because sometimes you go to these music festivals and you'll see little kids there with the big headphones on to block out the noise. And then either bored or just like looking at an iPhone. And it's cool to know that these kids are down here. They have books. It's sort of like an adventure. Like
Not only do they have books, Kids Space, which is, if you are from Southern California or you've been here, you mm-hmm. know that this is one of the greatest things that you can do with your kid.
Yeah.
And this isn't a drop your kid off type of a space. This is get down on the ground, build something amazing, get into it kind of space. And we brought that with them into the festival. So there's six different things you could do at the Kid Space activation within the festival. So it's not a kid-friendly festival. It's really a multi-generational festival. So as much as that 12-year-old's going to have a great time, I think that 50-year-old's going to have a great time as well.
Absolutely. I mean, it's definitely unique. And you guys are putting your money where your mouth is, because kids 10 under are free.
Yes.
Which is, you know, for a new festival to offer any sort of free ticket is it's a big move.
Yeah, I do wake up in the middle of the night and think how many kids are going to be there, you know, because there's just, there's not a ticket for them. So
right.
We don't know if every single ticket is going to come with a kid or if no kids are going to come. But there are some little surprises that we're looking at doing in the festival that will make everyone feel like a kid.
That's amazing. So things that are going to pop up that
yes.
are just little, some festival tricks.
Yes.
Well, not festival, some weekend tricks.
Yes, exactly.
So, in getting all the permits, in working with Pasadena, in having the vision, finding the space, what is it like to launch a new, you know, weekend festival mm-hmm. coming together in this day and age? What does it take to really get the word out? What does it take to really get people excited about it?
Well, although we call it weekend, it is a festival,
yeah.
and most festival drivers are going to be great bands.
Yeah.
So Paul went out and with the Arroyo in mind, with Pasadena in mind,
yeah.
what does this lineup look like? And he really wanted to celebrate the artist, the musician, the instrument. So what you'll see on this lineup are a lot of players.
Yeah.
And that's no disrespect to you know, other genres of music, because we have festivals that
mm-hmm.
really celebrate those other kinds of genres. But this was about John Mayall, the Meters, Tom Petty, Alabama Shakes, Lettuce. You know, you start to see kind of a theme there of people that love to play
yeah.
and play their instrument. So I think that really gave Paul some inspiration in terms of booking it. Another thing, you know, when you do create a festival from scratch, which we don't get to do so much these days,
yeah.
is you can control pacing.
Sure.
And pacing will dictate how everyone kind of interacts with the festival. So if you slow the sets down and you don't overlap them too much, and you have stages go down while other stages are on, it allows people to kind of enjoy a little more passive, in a kind of a passive sense, where you put that blanket down, you get your picnic basket from Rory at Barrel and Ashes, you get a great cocktail from Beer Belly, and you sit with your friends, and you can hear the music, but you can also have this conversation. And so, you know, a lot of our festivals start with how many bands we can put on a stage and run through. This festival was looked at a little bit differently. This was how many bands, the right bands, can we put to where people can still have time enjoying each other's company.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely a very big curation vibe to this whole approach. And we're going to take a quick break because we're going to talk about the picnic baskets and we're going to talk about the food and drink, which I'm very, very excited about because the lineup is equally as stellar as the bands playing. We have a track from the archives on Snacky Tunes here on heritageradionetwork.org. Welcome back to Snacky Tunes. I'm one half your host, Aaron Bresnitz. If you haven't yet, please subscribe to the podcast, leave us a rating, help us spread the word. We are here with Nick Adler, Festival Director of Arroyo Seco Weekend, which is coming up just in 1 week, which is amazing. What does it feel to be a week out from, I mean, any festival? I mean, obviously this is the first year, so it's sort of like we don't know what's going to happen, but just sitting here going like, okay, have all the boxes been checked? Do we know what we're getting into? Do we have everything ready to go?
That feels a lot like that.
Yeah.
Kind of checking in. The great thing about Golden Voice and our festival department is people really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I check on something and it's handled.
Yeah.
But it's ideas. Festivals. I love cooking. I think festivals are a lot like cooking. You know.
Yeah.
Great dishes come with layers of flavors.
Mm.
It's not just one thing. I mean, it can be, but with festivals, it's really about adding these really thin layers of whether that's culture, of experience, of taste, of sound, of visuals. How does someone walk into the festival? What do they do in those first 10 steps? Which ways are they looking? There is a lot that goes into these. This isn't just like, let's figure out where the fence line goes and kind of stick everything in the middle. I personally walk through as much as I can of the festival in my mind and try to find spots that are going to give people moments. And you create enough of those moments, people walk away and say, that's something that I want to return to. And more importantly, it's something that they go and they feel like they need to tell their friends about.
Yeah, I mean, this festival feels like there's a lot of shared moments, especially moments around food. I first want to talk about these picnic baskets.
Mm-hmm.
And about how they came about and what they are and who's creating them.
Yeah, the picnic basket program was developed by myself and Lizzie Stadler, who also does a lot of the food programs with me here at Golden Voice. And it was, you know, it goes back to, it was staring at us in the face. There's this big shady oak tree.
Mm.
It's on this kind of elevated hump because it's on a golf course, but it creates this really park-like feel, and you could just see it. And then, you know, I remember, not that I've had 100 picnics in my life. I've probably had 4 or 5 legitimate picnics.
They'll at least stand out in your mind.
But they are so clear to
me. Oh, yeah.
And everything about it, like laying down the blanket, trying to get the blanket right, putting the box down, unboxing the food, watching my, you know, kids play or my friends run around. You know, so that's what we were trying to recreate. And what's, you know, fantastic about being in LA and having kind of the support of a festival is that then we can go and say, okay, everybody can do a picnic basket.
Mm-hmm.
How do we take this thing to the next place? That comes from having access to amazing chefs.
Yeah.
And the ability to source the right materials and the right box. And from the very beginning, we wanted this to be another kind of discovery moment and almost like looked at it, how much time is someone going to spend with this box before they even put food in their mouth?
Right.
Like they get the box has a certain feel and look to it. They're opening it up. There's all these different compartments. There's a little bag with sundries. There's some chili mangoes from Moon Juice. There's some chapstick. There's a Turkish towel that you unroll and it's not for you to sit on. It's for you to put your food on.
Yeah.
You know, so there was a lot of kind of thought into this of how long can we stretch this experience before
yeah.
people actually put the food in their mouth. And then when it came to that, it was, you know, Walter Mansky, Rory from Barrel and Ashes, Jason from the Rose Cafe, Tal from Crossroads, you know, all these chefs that are great in their restaurant, but how do we take that and get them to split that up into little gems? So it was a really exciting program to put together.
And it's also just such a, like, it's so cool to walk into the festival and have this giant basket. It's
yes.
just like, come hang out with me. Like I have provisions.
Right. They're not for, yeah. it's not for one person. It's
no.
for, it's for two people. And so that starts this, you know, kind of two people turns into four. Someone else wants to bring in some drinks. So there's a really kind of community vibe in just these little kind of, you know, just 2 or 3 or 4 people are going to make up a little pocket of the festival.
Yeah. Now, in talking about the curation of the chefs
mm-hmm.
for this, I know that last time when we spoke, you know, Coachella had been going on, and you had the spicy pie guy, you had just those very standard food booths that you see at every festival. Mm-hmm. But when starting this from scratch, what is the approach? Because you can do whatever you want. And I have to say, what I loved is that in the press release, the bands are listed after the restaurants and the chefs, which you would, I mean, a couple years ago, would never happen. You would never be like, oh, spicy pie guy's going to be there, roasted corn guy's going to be there, like giant quesadilla guy's going to be there. But it's like you have amazing names, you know, Bruce Kalman, Fritzy Coop, Genghis Cohen, Kettle Black, you know, Ray Garcia. Like, you have heavy hitters there from the LA scene.
Yeah.
So how do you approach that? What do you do for a weekend like this?
This was about celebrating LA.
Yeah.
So that's as Coachella, we've been doing a better job of reaching out, going kind of national with our program. So this was more about, and this is year one. So when you do a festival in year one, you do look forward and kind of find a direction. Like, where is this going to be in 4 or 5 years? And we felt like we had an opportunity to celebrate restaurants and chefs that are from LA and doing things in LA. So that kind of is where we started. You know, it comes down to relationships, because you can call 10 restaurants, cold call them, and you'll probably end up with one chef.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or you can go to friends, which I've been extremely lucky to develop relationships with a lot of these guys and girls. And ask them, you know, do you want to be part of this? And also, did they get to experience Desert Trip? Did they get to experience Coachella? Did they come to Eat Drink Vegan? Did they do FYF? You know, so now we have all these kind of places to fit in all these different kinds of chefs and show them that they're not going to be on an island, that they're not going to be by themselves. They're going to be heavily supported. It makes it a lot easier with the ask. So
those are a lot of learnings that you had from the first time you did this at Coachella.
Right. Yeah. And which I still haven't got Crossroads to come back. I still haven't got Night Market to come back because of the really rough experience that they had in year one. But we've learned, Lizzie and I have learned so much from them, and our team is built out. And now you call a Jason Aroni, and before, you know, I can even put my phone away, it's 100% tell me when and where. Ray Garcia, tell me when and where. And so when you have the confidence of those guys, it's easier to go to someone like a Walter that, you know, we've been trying to get Walter since day one. Thank goodness he didn't come out in year one. But it helps that he can look around and say, oh, Neil's going to do it. Rory's doing it. Yeah. Jason's doing it. There's, you know, I can trust in this program.
And then also that they can call their chef buddies and be like, we're going to have running water. We're going to have back of house. We're going to have full support.
And yes, and not to say that those things aren't important, but most importantly, yeah, we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to have a good time. I mean, it's not going to be like a total slog.
Yeah, but they have a great time.
I mean, I love watching these types of chefs at these types of events, because they always have the biggest smiles. They're always having the best time because they're doing what they love, which is cooking, but then set in this incredible environment.
Oh, they love to get out of, you know, they love to get out of the kitchen when it's done right.
Yeah.
They love to interact with their fans or their customers, but they're just like us. They love a good drink, and they love good food, and they love good music, and this is right in everyone's backyard, and that was something that we stressed to all of them. This is not figure out how you drive somewhere, if you need a hotel room, how do you get your food there, what do you do with your staff? You put it in the back of the car, and you get on the 134, and you get there.
So, great chef lineup, great band lined up. Any collaborations, any crossovers, any bands loving food, any chefs loving music that are going to happen?
I don't know if we've gone into that. And I know there are some other festivals out there that do that really well, that pair that. I think I personally have been very careful to keep it simple in year one. And and allow those things to happen organically. And that goes for the Little Libraries program or our art program or the way that we've done the layout. Let's see what works. Let's not overextend ourselves. Let's not overpromise. That's really the focus in year one. And I think we'll see things in places that we can really integrate people.
So what are you most excited about?
I'm really excited about what we're calling the Draftsman Project. Mm. And these are six craftsman-style houses that we've given over to, I would say, I don't want to say local, but local and regional breweries. So normally at a Coachella, we have 70, 80, 90 breweries. At an Eat Drink Vegan, we have 90-plus breweries. This was about kind of going in the other direction. How few breweries can we bring in, and how deep can they go in their portfolio? Can we get the brewmaster out? Can we get the staff out? Can we get this kind of culture at each one of these houses that the houses kind of represent the architectural style of Pasadena, and then the flair and the energy that will be inside of them will be this brewery, and it'll allow that brewery to go super deep into what they do.
Yeah.
So it's a little more of a celebration of six instead of celebration of just craft beer in general and throw a lot of things at you. So I'm personally really excited to see how that program takes shape.
And who's coming out?
We have Three Weavers, we have El Segundo, we have Craftsman, Iron Triangle, and then I think you're stumping me on a couple.
I think that's enough. I think that's a ton of beers. Well, Nick, thank you so much. If people wanted to come, how do they get to go?
RoyalSecoWeekend.com. And also, you know, if you can't make it and you're not in Southern California, definitely follow along on the Instagram. There should be some really good stuff, not only in the feed, but we're doing something really different with stories this year, working on a documentary style stories feed. So that should be fun to watch along.
Instagram stories is a sleeper. Like, they are so awesome.
They are.
And they're really awesome, and it's a great way to experience stuff that you can't make it to.
I think we're taking a different angle on how people have used it in the past, so definitely watch along.
And the Instagram handle is?
Arroyo Seco Weekend. Weekend is no vowels.
Perfect. Who needs vowels? Well, thank you so much. We're going to take another quick musical break with a song from the Snacky Tunes archive, and then we have a live performance coming up next here on heritageradionetwork.org.
This program is brought to you by Chefs Collaborative, a national nonprofit network with a mission to inspire, educate, and celebrate chefs and food professionals building a better food system. Chefs Collaborative members work to make sustainable practices second nature for every chef in the United States. Chefs Collaborative was founded in 1993 by visionary chefs including Rick Bayless and Alice Waters, who acknowledged the influential role of food professionals on our food choices, our collective personal health, the vitality of cultures, and the integrity of the global environment. Chefs Collaborative believes that the greater culinary community can be a catalyst for positive change by expanding the market for good food and helping to preserve local farming and fishing communities. Change menus, change lives. Learn more about Chefs Collaborative at chefscollaborative.org.
Welcome back. We have the Undercover Dream Lovers live in studio. Welcome, guys.
Thanks. Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks for letting me crawl over all your gear in here. I mean, by count, I see like 2,023 petals. Am I close?
I think you're a little short. Yeah. I would count again. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. We're gonna take a quick pause. We're gonna do this. You want to go around the room and introduce yourselves?
Sure. My name is Matt Koenig, and I started the project. Wrote the songs and play guitar and sing.
I'm Galen. I just play guitar.
Well, don't just play guitar.
No, I just play guitar.
Okay, just plays
He's
guitar.
Just a guitar player.
Okay, just a guitar player.
We've got just a keyboard player over here.
Okay.
Yeah, my name's John Paul.
Okay.
And I'm Shane. I play bass.
Oh, okay. It's always interesting to kind of hear the process of how something goes from like a solo bedroom-esque project and how that kind of gets started, and then how it evolves into having just a guitar player and just a key player and just a bass player added in. But like, what was the kind of process of evolving this from one man to multiple men?
It's been pretty fast paced. The project, like, I was away from music for a few years and finally got to like recording 5 songs. I spontaneously like threw it together in like a 2-week period, and kind of getting the guys together was really fast, too. We had a show booked at Babies All Right and, like, just spread the word. And we're like, let's find a drummer. Let's find a keyboard player. Let's find a guitar player. And
when you say let's, is that, like, the royal we?
Well, I guess I always speak in we.
Oh, okay.
Personally, I have a tendency to be like, we should do this. And I mean, like, can you do this for me? So I have a tendency to use that.
Okay, I just want to clarify.
Yeah.
Okay.
Cool. Right, but I've actually got 2 guys. This is actually a 6-piece for the live show, and I have 2 drummers, too. An electronic drummer and a acoustic drummer, but they are absent because of previous engagements, so we put a robot to work tonight.
That's fine.
Yeah.
We have a lot of robots on this show.
Yeah.
So, like, you know, what are you essentially looking for when you're, when it goes from royal we to collective we?
Right. So, when I do it in my room, when I started everything, it was mostly me just wanting to get something that I could take it from royal we to collective we. I, like, just wanted to be out playing, but I had no material, and I just decided I needed to make something. So I did it really fast, and I didn't, like, think, oh, this is going to be good for this guy to play or that guy to play. I just knew I needed to put some songs together so I could get out there and, like, be doing it in person. So I was like, what's the fastest way? Just throw all these ideas at the wall, throw all of these songs on the table, and then everyone here is so talented. They just came in. The parts were already done, so they're like, sick. This is easy. We can just play this.
And when the parts being done, I mean, obviously, you know, since you're playing everything on the EP, when you bring in other people, is there room for interpretation, or is it just like a straightforward, like, this is how I wrote it, please play?
Oh, no,
this.
Definitely. Like, I always encourage people to come in and bring their take and touch. Some guys like to stick to it, but I'm like, let's make this different, too. I didn't, like, initially have, like, the grand vision figured out starting the first EP. And I just wanted to get going and have fun and play. But now, as, like, we've gotten through that, I've kind of realized that I can, like, be more controlling with that and have more of a vision. And, like, maybe I'll tell some parts in mine, or maybe I'll work with them on new parts. But this was pretty cut and dry. And, like, let's work with this basic idea. Maybe we change up some drum parts. Maybe we change up some key synth sounds. I didn't actually have any of the keyboard parts, like, saved, because I would work so fast. I would work on one synth part and, like, not be sure if it was going to stay in the song. So I just worked to the next one, and we'd have to, like, recreate all those sounds anyway.
Gotta get a good synth guy for that.
Yeah, that's true.
Can we hear a song?
Yeah, definitely.
What's the name of the first one?
This first track's called The Master, and it's off the first EP, While It's in Style.
I can't get over this amp that you guys brought. Like, please tell me. For those who can't see it because it's radio, it's a beautifully hand-painted amp with, like, a pyramid and a sunscape and, like, desert mountain. It's one of the coolest amps I've ever seen.
I bought the thing right before I went on a road trip and stopped in Savannah to see some friends. I went to SCAD and just had a bunch of weird art students go nuts on the thing. Because it was just too plain before.
That's just the guitar player.
Just guitar. So it's like not like a custom amp company, just like a bunch of friends drawing on it?
No, it's just a Vox AC-15, pretty standard stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty, maybe give them a heads up that they could definitely like do something with it. I know you sent the call out for the bands, but like how did you end up meeting each other, like as you kind of like layer the personalities together, like how did that all kind of come about?
Through my best friend and manager. She really pushed me to reach out to some guys who were doing music. I just started working with these guys, Shane and Galen, and knew they had some projects going on the side, and she was like, you know, you got to get this rolling, just reach out to them even if they're just filling in. And then, like, we just started putting it together. It was working really well, and we just kept going with it. It's been, like, a blast ever since.
So will this kind of change the future way of, like, writing? Is it now a band, or is it still a solo project? Does it go back to the Royal Week?
Yeah, it's still... So it's been back to the Royal Week because I've, like... I've been working on a lot of new tracks at my place, trying to figure out what I want to do next. Like I said, the first... five songs were like spontaneous, really quick, like just get something out there. I'd rather in the future, instead of just writing five songs and putting out five songs, write like 10 or 20 songs and choose like what I think's the best and the most clear and cohesive and like conceptually together, like a full idea. So I'm like just writing as much as I can, and I think the guys have been in a few times to my place like helping out, and it's still brand new ideas, but I think it's we play by ear a lot. I definitely do. My pace is go with the flow for sure. I like to bring in other people's inspiration and ideas, and that's for me how I learn everything that I've learned. I'm super open-eared. I'm like a sponge, so yeah, definitely going to have some influence from these guys down the line.
I know you mentioned Babies, but where are some of the other favorite places to play around town?
Well, for me, I'm with this project so new to it. We played at Bowery Electric and Transpico's and Babies, and that's really it for the project.
New.
Yeah, super new. I wrote the songs in October. We put the band together a month before the first show, and that was April 8th, which is like not long ago at all.
No, it's not. I mean, it's a very short time window. So we're like kind of living this, and there's not even like that much time to ask that many questions.
No, yeah, it's so.
Have you had any experience yet that will like eventually go on to become like band lore? So when you do radio, like 2 years down the line, like, oh, early days, we had this crazy thing happen to us, or is it still too new?
Well, I mean, I don't know. All of our practices are pretty, like, so I didn't have a space, and Shane has a space, and we use that, and we have so much gear, as you can see, like, stumbling over it. The thing is, a lot of the guys didn't know each other, and we pulled them together, and had I had a space that we just showed up, we, like, probably wouldn't have, like, gotten to know each other as well if we didn't have to, like, lug all of my amps and gear down 4 flights of stairs for like every single practice. Like, set up was like as much, if not more, time than practicing for us. So that's definitely gonna be remembered until I get a space.
Okay. Can we hear another song?
Yeah, totally.
What are you gonna play for us?
So this next track isn't out yet, and it's one that I will probably be coming out next. It's all recorded and stuff, but I'm working on some mixing, and it's called All You Need.
I have done this.
really like the name of the band. Where did it come from?
Oh, yeah. So I, like, was out of town for, like, 3 months around Thanksgiving, staying with my folks. And I was... songs were done. I had just written them. I knew I wanted to come back and get playing. But hardest part, I still did not have the band name. And I was, like, thinking of everything, writing... before I left, writing so many names down on my phone, and, like, nothing was sticking. And it was, like, a really late night, and my mom always has this... she's got, like, all these weird teas, and she has this valerian root tea. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but it's, like, it knocks you out, and before it knocks you out, you kind of, like, get really loopy, and if you're not tired, you get in this weird, disoriented headspace, like kind of like a lucid dream. And, so I had some valerian root tea, the weird headspace, and I was just thinking of names still. And I had, like, pillow over my face and, like, just thinking, and Undercover Dream Lovers popped into my head. And it was one of those moments where I'm like, I should write this down right now. And I almost didn't because I was so tired. I'm like, just do it. So luckily, I got myself up and, like, just wrote it on my phone. And next day I was like, this is sick, this flows, I just... really liked it, so yeah.
It's really, I mean, it rhymes and it just sounds so nice. I feel like there could be just a good piece on just, like, how bands got their names, but yeah. I've not heard the valerian root tea method yet.
It's very one of a kind.
So I know that you're working on the next kind of batch of songs, but any tours? What's coming up this summer?
We want to play in, we have some things set up in Philly, and we're working on some DC. We just want to hit up, like, the local cities and towns nearby while we're still, like, creating the initial, like, vibe and still figuring out what it is. But no, like, set path. We will be in Philly, I believe it's July 8th. And that's at, what's the name of the place?
Kung Fu Necktie.
No, we're not Kung Fu Necktie.
We are violent?
No.
Bourbon?
Bourbon and Branch? That's
well,
it.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah. Crypto gives a thumbs up.
That's our manager behind the screen. Like, the one. We have, like, a really organized email thread, but my memory sucks, so.
Well, we want to make sure we have time for one more song, but, where can people get the EP? Where can they
kind
of get all the information?
The internet. But,
it's a wide place. Narrow it down.
SoundCloud will definitely get you some of the songs downloaded on Bandcamp. We have a website, theundercoverdreamlovers.com. And, you can check us out there. Lots of cool photos, like all that stuff, which we've done all ourselves, which is really DIY to the max. We've, like, put everything together ourselves. So go check it out. Hopefully you guys like it.
Awesome. Big shout out to Remy, who put me in touch with you guys. Really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for coming on the show, The Collective We.
Oh, yes.
We will be back next week with another episode of Snacky Tunes. What's the name of the last song?
This one's Love the Tune.
Okay. Thanks for listening. We'll be right back.
We talk about food. We talk about music with musical dudes. Finger on the pulse, snacky tunes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.